It is Kiefer here live at Bonnaroo. I've got J.D. McPherson with me. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks, Kiefer, man. Glad to be here.
Signs and Signifiers is the name of the record. Before I talk about what you're doing now, you were in a punk band. Tell me what that band was like.
Well, I guess starting at the beginning, I was in three punk bands simultaneously, all having different names but the same members on different instruments, and we played four shows, but we made like probably five or six albums. You know, it was a very rural environment, so there really wasn't an audience except for ourselves, and so actually by the fourth show we filled a whole high school gym. But yeah, there was one band was called Slippy, one band was called Gladys, and one band was called The Fjords. And Slippy was sort of our baby. That was the one that we put the most work into. In The Fjords, we were trying to be Black Flag. And Gladys, we were trying to be the Dead Kennedys. We sent a tape to Alternative Tentacles, too, to try to get signed on Jello Biafra's label. But we didn't hear back.
No, didn't hear back on. No. Missed opportunity. I had read where, to be able to practice at your friend's house, you had to agree to back up his dad when he would play the VFW and other joints like that. What did you learn, you know, backing him up and playing a thing like the VFW that's kind of stayed with you today?
Well, initially it was just when he got ready to come back and sing some songs, he would wander back there. You know, he'd be just wearing like tidy whities and had like a, you know, his pouch of Red Man, and you know, he was ready to sing some Conway Twitty songs. And so initially that was it. You know, we'd play and play and play and play, and then he'd come in, and that was the rest of the evening. We'd be doing that. And then after we played for a while, we're sort of learning our instruments and learning other kind of forms musically. We got a gig. We played this VFW hall in Tuscaloosa, Oklahoma. And that was my first professional gig, because it was the first one I made. I think I made like $20 or something like that. But you know, well, I got a song out of it. I wrote a song about that experience. Other than that, I would say that you know, it's more stories than anything else. You know, there's more stories in that gig than lessons learned. You know. We, you know, first of all, don't hire bulldozer operators to play lead guitar, because they can't hear and they turn their twin reverb amps up to 10. And so that's all you're going to hear for the night. You know, he had no idea what the rest of the band was doing. You know, I learned that if you sprinkle salt on the floor, you won't slip if you're wearing cowboy boots. I don't know. There's probably other stories there, but I don't know if I can tell them on the air.
Well, those are two really, really good stories. Very important lessons learned. It all changed when you discovered Buddy Holly. How did you come across his music, and what was it that just clicked for you with his music?
I was buying, there was a record store that had opened in McAlester, Oklahoma, which was about an hour away from our place, our ranch there in southeast Oklahoma, and I was going up there and I was ordering things and then coming back the next week and picking them up and ordering more things. And so I was going like buying, you know, I was getting Stooges records and Ramones records and all these things. And at that time it was a little more difficult for me to find stuff, because there wasn't an internet yet, you know, or at least it hadn't made it to Buffalo Valley, Oklahoma yet. But you know, from reading Spin magazine, Cream magazine, finding some like punk zines and stuff that would happen in Tulsa, I would piece together my CD collection. And there was a girl that worked at this CD store that was really cool, and she was from Dallas, and so she had a little broader horizons than anybody I'd met at that point. And she was throwing a bunch of stuff out that wasn't selling, and one of them was really good Buddy Holly double disc. It's like mostly Decca stuff. And she said, "Hey, you might like this," and gave it to me. And I listened to it, and it was hooked immediately. Everything I liked about all those other records, or I liked about these songs, except somehow I could identify more with them, because I wasn't, you know, an angry English kid you know, waging class war. I wasn't a Jewish kid from Queens playing at CBGB. You know, I couldn't really identify with those guys on a personal level. And here's this Texas guy that was playing really good rock and music. And I don't know, it was good music, you know? And from there, I just kept digging and digging and looking for more old records. And I still listen to everything. I mean, everything I can get my hands on. I've always loved music, all music, but early rock and roll has been my kind of favorite thing.
Whether you're talking about R&B or rockabilly or old rock and roll, sonically it has to sound authentic for it to get across. Modern studios, you can do a lot of tricks to, you know, recreate that sound, but you chose to drive all the way to Chicago, record in a studio that was in an attic, no less, but it was full of vintage gear. Why?
Well, first of all, I trusted the producer, Mr. Jimmy Sutton, who is kind of the impresario of that kind of music in Chicago. I mean, he had played in Mighty Blue Kings and another band, Jimmy Sutton's Four Charms, that were just like monster R&B bands. And I knew that it would be a great sounding record if we teamed up. And I had some songs and we talked about it. And I mean, he has amassed this like incredible legion of musicians up in Chicago. And there's people up there that really, really, truly know that stuff. And he's kind of found them all. And so if you can corner those guys and get them a week, you know, you can make a pretty good sounding rhythm and blues record.
One of the themes at Bonnaroo this year is album art, and we have your record on the wall. Tell me a little bit about what's going on here. You look like you're reading a book, and either A, you have forgotten like to pay your taxes, or you've just read a really memorable passage. What's going on in the picture?
Well, this is sort of like the great, I think enough time has passed that I can talk about this, but this is sort of like the great inside joke. A lot of people think that there's some kind of like really deep, there's all these like loaded symbols in this. And, the title of the album is Signs and Signifiers, which alludes to semiotics and Roland Barthes and all these very heady sort of complicated ideas to explain symbology. And, you know, there's like yarn and darning needles on the floor. There's like this little cat coming into the side of the screen. I'm holding a book about Japanese death poems. There's like all these things. People are asking me, what's that thing on the wall? Is that an intercom, or what's that number set to and stuff? But I just thought it was really funny. I thought it was to make this just very simple, straightforward, you know, rock and roll record, and then have it appear to be some sort of like art rock record. So I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny, but I still laugh when some guy in Spain or some like DJ in Spain is like wants to know what the black cat means, and or you know, ask if I really am, you know, wearing a wedding ring, asking if all this stuff is and literally we just showed up and threw a couple things together, and I said, I'll just look like, you know, Morrissey or something, and try to get a funny picture.
That's a really good story. We're also asking people pick out your favorite Beatles album cover and tell us why you like it so much.
I like that question, because I of course we all love the Beatles, but like just lately I'm like really, really in love with the Beatles all over again. And I saw Paul McCartney a few days ago in Memphis, and then actually I'm hearing him soundcheck right across the. So it's cool. I mean, everybody likes Revolver. Everybody I know always says Revolver's their favorite and the favorite art. And I will have to say, as far as the art goes, that's my favorite Beatles album cover, because that's when they started getting a little roly-poly. You know, this thing started to kind of, their hair started getting longer, and they got these kind of weird, like, cartoon figures, and that's when the movie started being made, and that's when they were starting to kind of arc. But that record is still really, really Beatles-y to me, really, really, you know, early 60s sound to me. Like, And Your Bird Can Sing has one of my favorite Beatles songs. And that's just a great record all over. Maybe that's my favorite record. That one, and Abbey Road too, but the art is really cool on Revolver. It's when it starts to get weird.
It has certainly held up over the course of time, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the record is called Signs and Signifiers. J.D. McPherson, live at Bonnaroo. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.